to order and open a public hearing for Senate Bill 5501, Department of Agriculture. Mr. Siebert, would you present the
Certainly.
Budget?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you should have a packet of material at your place with a cover letter memo from our office. Attached are a quick overview of the department's governor's balanced budget with their mission statements, a chart showing their split of funds. I won't spend a lot of time going over this because the Office of Budget and Management will be giving you a similar presentation. Then you have the next chart shows the split of the agency and the different program units and budget units you'll be discussing over the next few days, and total funds in each program area. And then you can see a bar chart showing the budget for the department over time. And you can see that the black at the bottom of this bar chart shows general and lottery funds. And in the governor's balanced budget, the general lottery funds are just about equal to what they were in 99-01. And your last slide, do a few bullets on some of the budget and policy issues that you'll be hearing about over the course of the next few days. I've also attached a copy of our office's analysis of the governor's budget, a memo with the budget notes from 2001-03 budget, which is also attached. There was one significant audit report from the Secretary of State, and that was an audit of Measure 66 lottery fund spending. I've attached that also. You'll see that in a number of agencies that I'll be preparing for you, as it deals with a number of agencies, including the Department of Agriculture. And I've attached a copy of that full report. In addition, there were a couple of interim reports and studies. I've just attached the executive summary for the report on the feasibility study of the beef slaughter and fabrication enterprise. This is a joint study with the Economic and Community Development Department. And finally, a report on the Oregon Pesticide Use Reporting System from the department. I've attached also two bills that are related to the agency. One is House Bill 2254, which statutorily increases the livestock brand recording fee. I believe that bill is out of the House Substantive Committee and has been referred to the Ways and Means Committee, so you'll be discussing that later. And Senate Bill 5502, which is the fee ratification bill for the department, would ratify fees set administratively during the 01-03 interim. And finally are a number of the significant emergency board actions that took place over the course of the interim, and I've attached minutes for each of those. You'll see that most of those relate to pesticide use reporting.
Thank you, Paul. Any questions, comments? Commissioner Siebert? Thank you. Katie, Ms. Coble, would you like to present your budget overview? I should warn you that being the first committee after lunch, your challenge is to keep us all awake, so if you see sagging eyes, we don't take it personally.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Morgan, I don't think I want to hear this.
Mr. Chair, I just think in view of the fact that Ms. Kobe is no stranger to the building, but this is her inaugural run here at the Department of Ag, and presenting the budget is no easy task and very complex, requires a lot of communication skills. And we just want to let you know that we wish you the best of luck in your endeavors here.
Yeah, you prayed.
Well, are we going to baptize her like we do the new people on the House and Senate?
That's a thought.
We're ready when you are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm feeling very comfortable right now. My name is Katie Koba. I am the director of the Department of Agriculture. Pending Senate confirmation, and I have the pleasure of spending 2 hours with you this afternoon and then immediately proceeding to the Senate Rules Committee for my Senate confirmation hearing.
Oh, well, we're trusting you'll be back again on Monday.
There's no guarantee. As you know, I've been on the job 9 days now, and I feel like I've been cramming for a test, and so I've taken the liberty of bringing my staff who really know what's going on, and will be relying on them to respond to questions that I can't answer. And so I thought I'd take a moment just to introduce those members for the record. I think you all know them. Chuck Craig, Deputy Director for the Department and handles the Natural Resources Policy Area. Lisa Hansen, Assistant Director and handles Food Safety and Consumer Protection and has had the pleasure of the Pesticide Use Reporting System. And then John Chapinski, Assistant Director for Marketing and Laboratory Services. And Brent Searle, who has helped us put together the budget presentation as a Special Assistant to the Director for the Department. With your approval, we're going to take the first part of the session today and give an overview of the ag industry. We are a little unique in our agency in that we are responsible for promoting and representing the agricultural industry here in the state, so I thought I'd take a moment to kind of bring you up to speed and give you a big picture about what's going on. I know all of you are very well connected with industry, but these are always interesting figures to look at.
If I might take just a second, what I would prefer is that she's got, we will be presented with sections in the presentation, and if we could hold the questions until each section is done, then we'll open it for questions. So we have the handout, and make notes, and I think it would be easier for Ms. Koba to get through her presentation, and it might be more efficient for us. So
this morning what I'd like to do is give you an industry overview, agriculture's role in Oregon's economy, the state of the agricultural economy, and top commodities and production areas, and finally challenges and opportunities that we see for the industry. Then we'll move to the department and talk about our mission, role, purpose, work through some of our high-level performance measures with you, talk about budget sources and use, and what we see looking forward. And if we get through everything today, it will be a miracle. Agriculture is a very important part of Oregon's economy, and the governor has stressed this to me when he talked to me about taking over this position. When you account for all economic activity and jobs supported by agriculture, including on-farm employment and inputs, equipment, food processing, etc., the industry accounts for 8% of jobs, more than 140,000 or one of every 12 in Oregon, $2.8 billion in payroll, and 9% of gross state product. Producers spend over $3.5 billion to produce their crops and livestock. This includes outlay for seed, feed, fertilizer, equipment, parts, fencing, other costs that go into businesses and communities where those farms exist. And as we all well know, agriculture plays a significant economic contribution to the rural parts of Oregon. Here's a chart that displays some of the challenges that we all know are facing the agricultural industry today. As you can see, the value of production has risen steadily from 1985 up through 97. We saw a slight decrease in 98 and 99, and we're seeing a slight rebound from value of production in 99. But the big thing that you'll notice in this graph is the net farm income, which has declined now from 1997. And basically what we see are that expenses are taking a bigger and bigger bite from the value of production and resulting in challenging times for our farmers and ranchers here in Oregon. And as you can see, I pretty well summed those points up in the graph. Output is increasing, but costs for growers and ranchers are increasing at a greater rate, so that net farm production is decreasing. Who are Oregon's farmers and ranchers? We have 40,000 producers managing 17.5 million acres of private property throughout the state. This equals 25% of Oregon's lands. 86% are sole proprietor, family ownership, 8% are family-owned partnerships, 5% are family-owned corporations, and only 1% are non-family-owned corporations or other entities. So still here in Oregon, we are small family, predominantly small family farm operations. In the department, we are also very interested in the food processing industry, and that's an industry as well that has struggled over the last 5 years or so. For us, it's very important to add value to our agricultural products here in Oregon wherever we can. It results in increased jobs for Oregonians and increased output for Oregon's economy. The total number of food processors in Oregon has remained relatively static over the past decade, numbers about 1,800. However, as is well known, we've had a number of large value-added operations that have gone out of business, including AgriPac, AgriLink, and additional small and medium-sized processors. Total payroll in the processing sector is $666 million, averaging just about $28,000 per job, and total workers number near 24,000. Vast majority of firms are located in the western part of the state, primarily in the Willamette Valley, and include wineries, bakeries, a variety of fruit, nut, and vegetable processors. On the east side, in Umatilla-Morrow area and Malheur counties, we have a large number of vegetable processing firms. Firms along the coast and in the central parts of the state tend to be smaller and cater to the tourist or local trade. There's one thing to think about when you think about Oregon agriculture. It is that it's very diverse. We have over 250 commodities, 25 of which generate over $20 million in sales. This actually helps our industry be more stable overall. You will oftentimes have one sector within the industry which may be struggling, but you will also find other sectors that are doing well. And I think, unlike California, which produces high quantity, Oregon cannot compete with California in terms of quantity. What we can compete on is quality of our products and focusing on niche markets. These are the primary segments in Oregon's agricultural industry. The largest is the when you're talking about sectors, it is nursery and greenhouse, but when you lump together field crops, you have 24% of the industry is field crops, then you have nursery and greenhouse at 18%, livestock and poultry at 23%, and you can read on through there. Oregon leads the nation in the production of grass seed, hazelnuts, Christmas trees, peppermint, cane berries, and potted florist azaleas. In the ranking of our commodities here, you will see nursery and greenhouse is by far the largest sector within the industry, followed by cattle and calves, hay, grass seed, and on down the line. While we spoke earlier about the importance of agriculture to Oregon's rural economy, those of us in the industry know that a lot of agriculture production happens in the more urban parts of the state. And Marion County is the number one producing agricultural county, followed closely by Clackamas. Then you have Umatilla, obviously on the east side. And then you're back to really close to the metro areas with Yamhill and Washington County. When you look at industry-specific sectors, greenhouse and nursery, the number one sector in the industry, the largest county there is Clackamas, Marion, Washington, Yamhill, Multnomah. I think most people, when they would look at these counties, would consider them urban counties. Contrast that to cattle and calves, which you primarily see in rural parts of the state. Malheur, Harney, Baker, Klamath, and Morrow, and as you can see, the issues that we've noted below, because of the location and the industry sector, they face different challenges. This is an interesting statistic for me. I didn't realize. By acreage, hay is the single largest commodity in Oregon, grown over 1 million acres. And as you can see, grown in Umatilla, Malheur, Lake, Harney, and Klamath County. And then we just wanted to lay out for you other top crop counties. Grass seed grown primarily in the valley. Lynn, Marion, Yamhill, Polk, Benton. Milk, you know, I think for many years everyone thought of milk and associated that with Tillamook County. Now because of the dairy and the large 3 mile Canyon Farm going in on the eastern side, you've got significant dairy presence now in Morrow County as well as Marion and Polk counties. That's fine. Keep them awake this way. This is another key statistic, and that's the importance of water, which we all know. for the agricultural industry, but when you compare the jump in the number of irrigated acres from 92 to 97, this was another very interesting statistic that jumped out at me. Nearly 2 million acres of Oregon agricultural farmland is irrigated. 47% of all Oregon farms do some irrigation. 44% of those harvested cropland acres are irrigated. And this is the key point. Commodities produced with irrigation represent 75% of the total value of Oregon's harvested crops. So as we struggle with the issue of water, that is going to continue to be a key issue for Oregon's agricultural industry. And here you can see irrigation by county. Not surprisingly, Klamath County at the top of the list, and obviously facing some very difficult challenges in terms of water allocation right now. The export market is absolutely critical to Oregon agriculture. We export the vast majority of our products. 80% of production leaves the state. 40% of production leaves the country. We are number two export in dollar value after high tech for the state of Oregon as a whole. And agriculture accounts for about 19% of total state exports. 60% of the Port of Portland's total tonnage of exports is agriculture. Obviously, you'll see when I talk later, that's one of the reasons that markets are so critical to agriculture. We try to outline for you some of the key challenges for agriculture. Number one is a structural challenge. The industry is consolidating, even though we talked earlier about it is primarily still small family-owned farms. In the past 5 years, more than 700 mergers and acquisitions per year occurred in the food industry. In the 100 largest U.S. cities, four grocery firms total 72% of retail food sales. This is a challenge for us in terms of, again, finding markets for our agricultural products. We have fewer processors, bankruptcies of AgriPac, AgriFrozen, Chiquita Pullout, and fewer places to market our products. Second, structural issue, trade issues. Again, pointing out the critical importance of being active in marketing, in international marketing, and in international trade policies. Challenges such as the strong dollar, which has raised U.S. farm export prices by 30% from 1995, which effectively places Oregon products at a disadvantage in export markets. And then obviously imports and dumping Chilean raspberries, Chinese apple products, etc. All provide real challenges for our agricultural industry. I love this one. Changing consumer preferences. More households now have pets than children. I came to the conclusion that we ought to be in the pet food producing business as opposed to the food producing business for human consumption. There's no question that the U.S. population is aging rapidly, and they're choosing kind of a different kind of food and eating lifestyle than perhaps younger population does. They like smaller proportion foods that are very easy to prepare. Increasing number of ethnic groups. And then product convenience and taste rank at the top of the consumer list of demands. But obviously, the population is increasingly vocal about how and where food is produced, something that I think we can take advantage of because we are very much a quality state in terms of our production. Expenses. We talked about this as well a little earlier on. It costs more to farm in Oregon. Labor costs are higher. Electricity and fuel no longer present an advantage, and we also have environmental challenges. We will never be able to compete in the global market in terms of cost of labor, and so it's incumbent upon this industry to be smarter, to use technology and innovation and creativity wherever we can if we really want to compete. Fifth challenge for the industry, environmental requirements that affect the way producers manage their resources. Some of these efforts represent cost outlays with no short-term returns. Investments in the future of these resources, restrictions will impact resource use. To our credit, most farmers have been practicing and adopting good management practices for decades. Actually, we think that we can use what we do here in Oregon as a marketing advantage for our products in the global market. And finally, there's no question that food safety is becoming a higher and higher priority for the consumer market. Increased international trade in food has brought challenges of food pathogens and other food safety issues. Meat recalls and other incidents of food safety have the public concern. Growers, processors, and food safety agencies are rethinking how food is grown, processed, transported, stored, and handled by consumers. As I mentioned, agriculture can't and will not keep doing things the way that they were done a decade ago or even 5 years ago, and you will see that our farmers and ranchers are doing these things. They are being flexible, they adapt to situations, they use innovation, new products, new marketing strategies, new partnerships. We must have a continued commitment to research and development for our industry, adopt new technology, keep an eye on consumer trends, and pay attention to natural resource conditions. The advantage that Oregon does have, in addition to being smart, is our diversity of crops and production regions, our reputation of producing quality products, our recognized efforts in sustainable resource production. Technology and science are improving to enable production that meets environmental goals. We have aggressive marketing programs and strong commodity commission programs. We have a wonderful opportunity in the Food Innovation Center and our export certification programs. That center is located in downtown Portland, and if you haven't ever been there, I would strongly encourage you to take an opportunity and go up and tour the facility. We are very closely partnered with Oregon State University, which has the Food Innovation Center piece up in Portland, and we work with them closely on research and extension facilities and capabilities. We have major West Coast port facilities. Land base, water, and infrastructure will continue to be available as Oregonians recognize their importance. And finally, our land use system and right to farm laws help us minimize conflicts with non-farm residents.
Kitty, would this be a good place
to... This is a good time.
Committee members, do we have any
brief
questions?
Brief snapshot of the industry.
Just a couple of things.
Representative Krieger.
Kitty, you talked about diversity. You mentioned the minimum wage, which we all know how that's going to affect, especially about its index the way it is now. And later on, just a few minutes ago, you talked about competing using high-tech. And I kind of question how long the innovation and the high tech and all these things that we can maneuver to help us compete, because we are at a disadvantage. It seems to me like we can only go so far with that before we can't compete. And instead of having the Willamette Valley raising corn and crops and beans, it'll all be grass seed because we can't compete. And pretty soon someone will be doing that. I guess that's kind of a statement, but I don't. Do you have any way of envisioning how Oregon is going to continue to compete when we're at a disadvantage?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krieger, you know, this is an amazing industry, and obviously it's facing tough times. But we have examples all over the state of farmers and ranchers who have adopted new technology and new innovation and created niche products for niche markets. I wouldn't be sitting here today if I thought the Willamette Valley was going to one day eventually be all grass seed. I just think that we must continue to make investments in this industry. We must continue to work particularly on the research and development side. When you compare the challenges that this industry is facing compared to the high-tech industry, they're very, very similar. High-tech cannot compete on labor costs. And what we're seeing is a number of high-tech manufacturing facilities that are moving overseas. What you see here, though, when you talk to Intel or Hewlett-Packard, is the fact that they are making huge investments in research and development. And I think if somehow we can weather the economic storm that we're facing now and the extreme challenges that we have in terms of budget, we've got to figure out a way to continue to invest in our education system, K-12 up through higher ed, because that's going to be a resource that the ag industry is going to have to rely on. I think there are opportunities for this industry to partner with the high-tech industry. And frankly, I'd like to see if I can help do some of that. to see if there are, you know, some of their ideas that we can steal, or if they can help us continue to adapt new technology, to continue to try new things. But I'm very optimistic. I have an incredible amount of faith in this industry, and I think we will continue to survive and thrive in the global economy. Our competitors are not going to be able to keep their labor costs down forever either. So just have to keep being smarter.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hope I have a few questions here. On page 8, the payroll and average pay of different commodity groups, tremendous swing. Uh-huh. Particularly, I notice on frozen specialties, $50,500 average pay seems extremely high for an industry. But I notice as you go down the list, there's a wide variance. It's about in the middle of the page.
Mr. Chairman, I wouldn't be able to tell you at this point in time why, you know, the frozen specialties jumps out at the $50,000, other than that may be a small niche sector that has a lot of technical, professional kinds of, you know, folks in that business that are higher paid folks. We'd be happy to go back and see if we can dig up the real answer to your question. I'm just speculating.
It'd be interesting what they have that the rest of the commodities don't have, I guess. Yeah.
And I'm sure what we'd want to do is figure out, if we could, what the specific companies are that fall in that category, and that may help us explain why that average payroll is higher.
Second question is on page 18. It brings to mind, I believe, that on the Columbia River, Washington State withdraws about twice the amount of water that Oregon does, which would be a question, I guess, kind of a broad question, but how did we get in this box, and is it a tremendous disadvantage for the state of Oregon? I would think it is, but as far as I know, there's a considerable amount of land along the Columbia River that could be irrigated and much more productive were we pulling our share of the water. And is there anything we can do about that?
Mr. Chair, I actually received, as part of the transition team documents, the actual statistics about the percentage of water that Washington and Idaho pull out of the Columbia River system versus Oregon. And you're right. They're somewhere, it's off the top of my head again, 3-4% range, and Oregon is like 0.7% or something like that. Fortunately, this issue doesn't fall completely within our department. It is a Water Resources Department issue, and I would encourage the committee to visit with that department when they appear in front of you. But in the big picture, there's no question, based on the statistics, if we have more water available to our producers, we can produce more product. So I do think it's something that needs to be looked into.
Have we documented, and maybe this would be in your, should come from your department, have we documented the need or the potential for the use of water?
Why don't you come up?
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Chuck Craig, the Deputy Director for Department of Agriculture. Several years ago, we undertook a rather extensive series of projects to analyze the future needs for water by agriculture for economic development. And on a statewide basin-by-basin basis, we did make the best projections that we could at that time as to what the future needs would be. And then subsequently, we filed a series of requests for reservations of water for future economic development. A number of those that are related to the use of live flows on the Columbia, however, were never acted on because of the endangered species issues and the ecosystem sensitivity of that river system at the time. But we have done that, and we could potentially update that. So
who makes that decision?
They are filed with the Water Resources Department.
Okay. So who coordinates that between Washington and other states?
Mr. Chair, I am not sure entirely what the mechanism for coordination with the state of Washington under Columbia is. I you're outside my area of expertise, so
it might be interesting if you could do some research on that for us and see if we're getting our fair shake on this.
Yeah.
Another question on page 22, Katie. You made the point, which I think we're all very concerned about, the lack of infrastructure in our industry. Does the Department of Agriculture have a role here in resolving that problem? We can produce all the product in the world, but if we don't have the infrastructure to market it, we're not doing our producers a favor, in my opinion.
Mr. Chairman, again, when Governor Kulongoski talked to me about taking this position, he wanted me to focus on economic development and marketing opportunities for the industry. And obviously I've spent a lot of the last decade focused on economic development activities. And I view the food processing industry just like any other business in the state. And we have a small marketing division, which you'll hear about a little bit more in more detail in the next few days. But we have one person on staff who used to work for the Economic and Community Development Department and is really focused on trying to figure out opportunities for job creation, working with other staff in the agency in terms of structural challenges and how we might partner with other agencies and the private sector to address some of those. We are not staffed up by any means to take the lead on these issues, but I would expect that our department will work very closely with Economic and Community Development Department in their retention, expansion, and recruitment efforts, and make sure that food processing and transportation infrastructure kinds of issues are on their radar screen. And I would hope that we could partner with them, partner with the Port of Portland and the private sector to try to address some of these concerns.
Are we identifying the barriers that have forced some of the people out and maybe what we need to address before we're going to attract more infrastructure back in?
Mr. Chairman, we have, and I think if we had Jerry Gardner sitting here in front of you, he could probably spend all day giving you his perspective on what those barriers are. But we work very closely with the processing industry. Obviously, some of those are just challenges that the industry faces as a whole. I would use as an example here beef processing. We have absolutely no capability to process beef here in Oregon, and 20, 30 years ago, we did have facilities. Same with hog production and other meat processing facilities. A lot of that is just economies of scale. And when you've got, the big facilities in the Midwest, you can't compete with those. But you'll find in the beef processing report that you have seen, again, if we focus on niche marketing and creating a product to focus on a particular consumer as opposed to mass kinds of processing for beef, we think there's an opportunity there and an opportunity we could fill here in Oregon. So it's going to be those kinds of things that we're going to look at and then partner with whoever we can to try to actually get a facility sited.
I would think that's a very real role for the department, whether it's land use or water resources or water treatment or those kind of barriers. At least we should identify so that the appropriate departments with authority can zero in on that. The last question I have, and then Representative Morgan has a question. On page 29, in the footnotes, it mentions the softening dollar, or the dollar value, and whether you want to answer that today or not, but it would be interesting, I think, for our committee to understand how big an impact that is. And I know when you're looking at foreign markets, that's huge. But where we are and where the graphs might show what the changes in dollar value would do to our markets.
John, you want to set up that now or wait and address it later?
Mr. Chairman, if it's all right, we'll be prepared to address that as we talk more specifically about ag development and marketing activities.
And I don't know that we need to spend a lot of time at it, but I think it'd just be good background for us.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is kind of revisiting a point that Senator Mesley raised, but I think that certainly during the time that I've been in the legislature talking to the agricultural producers, the lack of our ability to process the products is a big concern and viewed as a real impediment to people being able to have a kind of a stable and predictable future out in front of them. But I'm wondering if part of the issue has to revolve around the diversity of the crops and the widespread area that we have them over and the ability to put processing centers in place that can deal with all of the many number of crops that we have. It's not like everybody's planting corn here like they do in Iowa, and so you just need two big corn processing plants. So I'm curious to know what the department is thinking about along those lines, about how you're going to deal with processing a wide diversity of products. And then we also have, as you outlined real clearly, high production costs that related to a whole bunch of things. And I'd be interested to know how the department's strategizing around the how can we come into the market knowing that we're priced above anything anyway, and be successful or help our producers to be successful. And then the other question that I had was there, I think there's an issue in export markets that's related to the strength of the dollar, but I think that there's also issues that are related to trade agreements that we're subject to, and it would be interesting to have a discussion about how that is the impacts that those agreements are having on Oregon agriculture.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morgan, again, I think those are excellent questions, and when we get to our ag development and marketing section, I know John and staff can be prepared to answer those. I would just take a stab in general about, you know, do we produce enough of any one product to feasibly process it here in the state? I think AgriPac is an example of a facility, you know, that was successful for many years and has now obviously gone bankrupt. NORPAC, on the other hand, continues to be fairly economically healthy in terms of processing. And those are, you know, fruit and vegetable processors. Part of the challenge that we're facing is changing consumer preferences away from canned or frozen product. And I think that's been part of the challenge, particularly for the fruit and vegetable processors. But you compare that, say, to Stalbush Island Farms, which does smaller kind of a niche processor, processes baby foods for the international market, highlighting organic baby foods. So I think it's going to be incumbent upon the department to work with the food processing industry and figure out where the market is headed and how Oregon can compete in the international market, and what we need to do structurally, and if there are business kinds of changes that we need to implement here in Oregon, whether it's tax law or what have you, then it's the responsibility of this agency to come back and advocate for that in front of the legislature.
Thank you.
So that's a very general answer, and then we'll get to the specifics when we get to that section.
Any other questions, comments? Katie, I seem to be communicating with staff. Does the Department of Agriculture have a role with the fisheries products in their plants and trying to expand their markets and worldwide markets and those kind of things? Except for on page 8, it's the only place I've seen it come out in your presentation.
Mr. Chairman, we do. And this the department became very active with the fishing industry when I was still at the department, which has been a long time ago. over 8 years ago, and that was when really the first kind of salmon crisis hit, and the industry was looking at alternatives to salmon, and I got involved in the Pacific whiting market and developing of Pacific whiting. And I think it was really because of conversations that then Director Bruce Anders had with the industry, and they really asked the department if they could kind of take the fishing industry under their wings in terms of marketing. So our marketing programs handle agricultural products, which includes the fishing industry, and then economic and community development handles non-ag products, manufactured products, but they have secondary wood products in their marketing arm. And then obviously our two divisions work very closely together. If you want, he was wiggling over here, so.
Mr. Chair, we also have the four seafood-related commodity commissions that we help administer and assist in their efforts to market their products.
And that's crab, trawl,
albacore, and salmon.
Do you see opportunities there? I know they've got infrastructure problems as well. Do you see opportunities for the state of Oregon?
Mr. Chairman, I do. Again, I wouldn't be sitting here if I didn't. I think the challenges that the fishing industry is facing may be even more difficult than the ag industry. But we've got to sit down with the players and see where we have opportunities, and I think we do, and take advantage of those opportunities.
Chair Senator Krieger.
I think the currently not targeted fish in the Sebastius complex, there's 85 fish in there, there's about 7 or 8 that seem to be the high value. We really haven't looked at how we could market those, a lot of those others, and they basically haven't been touched. So I think there is a lot of opportunity there.
Mr. Chairman, I think John Chapinski would like to address this as well.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm John Chapinski, Assistant Director for the Department of Agriculture. Actually, within the seafood industry, we've had some good success in the past year developing markets and creating capacity. A longtime marketing contact of the state of Oregon through developmental activities done over 10 years ago in Korea became this year not just a customer of Oregon agriculture, but an investor. This is an investment project in Charleston where the investor himself and his corporation, which is one of Korea's largest seafood companies, has put up about $1.2 million towards an ultimately, it's about a $2.5 million project, which just recently went into production, employing 12 people. The future prospects for that facility would have 60 people working there, which would make that facility the largest private employer of people in Coos County. The product being processed there is something known as a slime eel, also known as hagfish. It's hard to come up with a good name for it that would actually sound appealing. It's what we would call here an underutilized species. That is, it's product that had been caught off the coast of Oregon and never really found much value for. Having a customer in Korea who identified that product and to understand that we did have that resource, but it needed to have processing, is, I think, a picture-perfect demonstration of what the Department of Agriculture is all about, because it's not just to say the customer wanted a product and did we have it on the shelf. Well, in this case, it wasn't on the shelf. It had to be developed. The processing had to be identified and players put together. So the Department of Agriculture, again, working with a longtime contact, recognized that with a few ducks in a row, we could actually create an opportunity here. So working with the local people in that area, local regional development officer for the Economic and Community Development Department, and others in the area, actually kind of creating some horsepower behind this project, which again is long-term, because we're not just selling a short-term product but actually creating some employment opportunities. So the seafood area within this is something that I think we look at in terms of targeting these so-called underutilized species, products that we don't value here but which have tremendous value maybe somewhere else.
question, Shani Morgan.
I was just wondering if part of your marketing program is going to involve changing the name of the eel.
Well, as long as the market's in Korea where they've got a name for it that actually has its own attraction, if we could ever, you know, consider about developing the market here, it's used in what would be, I guess, the common, we would call it hot pots, but it would be kind of, I'm sorry, I would call casseroles or just hot pots here. So it's even the application, that is the use of these slime eels, would be unusual within the United States, and certainly if we could develop a market for it here. The interesting thing, though, about a project that although for Coos County is of tremendous benefit, you know, the total value on this, and they were able to use the facility and get it refitted for just, like I said, under $3 million. $3 million for most venture capitalists doesn't even excite any interest. The states between New York and California are often called by venture capitalists the flyover states. Rural America represents, you know, 19 some percent of rural businesses, but in terms of venture capitalism, it captures less than 2% of venture capitalist dollars. And what they're looking for, people that are that is independent of the project, who are wishing to put money into something, they're looking for something compelling that's going to be of a large scale and that returns, you know, 15 plus, probably 20% return on investment. Well, agriculture is not in that ballpark. It requires people that have a particular need. It's identifying those in the local community who recognize the social value, not just the economic value, so that a project of 12% or 13% passes muster. It's also identifying those customers in Korea and Japan who've got the money, who look at it not just as a project in and of itself, but as a source of material that they can, you know, make money perhaps further down the distribution chain. So it's tying marketing with development that makes our department quite unique, and I think that in this case we've got a great success story, albeit a small success story.
You might have mentioned, but it's also key in this case that there was, I think, two or three of the local fishermen that have invested quite heavily into this project too. So it's kind of unique.
It was difficult, not just in terms of the structural work, but I think also in terms of the attitudes, the attitudinal changes, because for the majority of our processor producers, the big leap of faith is to go from being a grower to being a processor. It's making that leap, which farmers, you would think, just looking at the industry, put up with a great deal of risk, but it's taking that risk to a different dimension when we're asking a grower or a farmer or a fisherman to become a processor. But we're seeing small successes, and it's taking these baby steps that I think will contribute to the betterment of the industry.
Well, thank you. I know you're, and that's what I suspected, that you're doing an awful lot of work in the fishing industry, and so I wanted to get that on the record.
Mr. Chair. Bob Goodman at Brookings started that in sometime in the 80s when I was there. And they are rightly named slime eels, if you ever see them. And they want to bite each other when they're alive. So they had to sedate them. So at that time, they were taking them for the leather of the skin, not the flesh. So keep them from biting each other and have the leather have holes in them, they have to sedate them right away on the boat. But you might want to know that.
I'm really glad we learned that.
And Pacific Whiting or Hake, so we are renaming everything so it's more, you know, it sounds better.
Mr. Chair, Representative, actually the Brookings area is another area of potential interest to this investor. So with luck that the facility in Charleston develops, we may have more opportunity further down the coast.
Well, just another area, and we need to move on, but the live fisheries is also another opportunity. At least we're seeing in some parts of the Oregon coast. It's pretty good margins in the market. So, Ms. Kober, why don't you move on to the mission?
Mr. Chair and committee members, get into the stuff that's not nearly as exciting. get our picture back on the board here. Our mission... is really threefold. We provide food safety and consumer protection. We support the economic enhancement of the agricultural industry and the state's economy, and we support the utilization of natural resources to produce food and fiber throughout effective land and water management efforts. And one of the things that makes our department so unique and what I would hope that you would take away from the presentation today is the industry is diverse and the department is diverse. Our services actually touch every Oregonian in some way, from the food we consume to the products and fuels we purchase every day to the natural resources that surround us and the jobs and economy of our state. Our staff is also extremely diverse. We have hundreds of specialists with advanced education and experience in business development and marketing, plant pathology, entomology, weed, biocontrol, and horticulture, agricultural chemists and soils, meteorologists, hydrologists, water quality specialists, and conservation biologists, metrologists and measurement specialists, chemists, food scientists, laboratory specialists, and veterinarians and animal health specialists. I think the other thing that makes our agency unique is the duality of our mission. We are charged with both promoting and regulating the agricultural industry. And I think this is really critical for this agency and one thing that I would always fight strongly to keep, because I believe this does provide the critical perspective of regulating with an understanding of the business side of agriculture and promoting with the knowledge of how the industry is structured and how it functions. You've met my deputy director and two assistant directors that oversee the three broad policy areas. We have 9 program divisions plus laboratory services which fit into these policy areas and provide the framework for implementing over 30 different chapters of the ORS. The State Board of Agriculture provides policy advice, review, and approval of water quality plans and input on program activities. Here's our structure, which is small, but again maybe shows just how diverse we are. We have a state board that's appointed by the governor, and I'm appointed by the governor. We have our administration and information office. The wine advisory board is kind of a unique little board that's tacked on for our agency. And then you see our 3 policy areas: natural resources, which includes plant, natural resources division, and the animal health and identification division. The food safety and consumer protection policy area, which includes the food safety division, the pesticides division, measurement standards division, and commodity inspection division. And then finally, the ag development and marketing area, which includes our ag development and marketing division and our laboratory services.
I just have to say you've got better eyes than I do. I can't read either one. Sorry, move on.
Is there anywhere where this is bigger?
Yep, it's in the budget.
In the budget.
I'm informed that it's in the budget document.
Page 3, I believe.
I'm sure we can find that for you.
Well, that's right. Well,
here we go. Okay.
Proceed on. We can.
Page 4. So under tab 1, page 4. Working with the Progress Board, we have identified 25 performance measures that follow our outcomes and progress. And I think part of the challenge in working on performance measures, again, is the diversity of the agency. And I think the staff really tried to narrow down the 25, but ended up with 25. And one of the things that I've explored initially is perhaps identifying maybe 10 primary measures and 15 secondary measures, but that's something that we'll look to in the future. We are linked to 6 Oregon benchmarks, and we do go through a strategic planning process, which is included in your larger budget book. So what we'd like to try to do now is pull out just a couple of our performance measures and kind of talk through those and give you a flavor for them in a graphic form. In terms of economic development, here you can see that we track sales as a result of our trade activities with Oregon producers and processors. In 2001, we were about $38 million in sales as a result of our activities. In 2002, we were over $40 million. and then you can see the targets that we're going to aim for in the future.
I'm training my committee here.
I write this down. I can't remember it that well.
Another performance measure in the economic development area is the number of producers and packers requesting audits for good agricultural and good handling practices certification. And this is a mouthful and one that I'm quickly trying to get up to speed on. But basically, what are good agricultural and good handling practices area allows for those that are interested in taking advantage of it is voluntary on-farm quality assurance program, which audits practices on the farm, practices that farmers and processors use to minimize their risk of microbial contamination in food, and basically this can then turn into a marketing aspect for those products in consumer markets. And John can tell you a lot more about it when we get to that section, or if you want to ask questions today, that's fine as well. I think the other key piece of this program, our Ag Development and Marketing Division is 10 staff. What we are looking for are opportunities within our agency to involve other parts of the agency in our economic development efforts. The Good Agricultural and Good Handling Practices program is in our Commodity Inspection Division. And so basically what you see is a link between Commodity Inspection and our marketing programs, again, to provide a tool for farmers and ranchers to get their product into the market. Here you will see an example of a measure which also promotes economic development as well as deals with consumer protection. And this measures the percent of emergency animal disease outbreaks and investigations that are successfully eradicated or resolved. So basically what we do in this division is we try to keep Oregon free from major livestock diseases that can wipe out entire herds and can damage our products in the marketplace. Elk tuberculosis outbreak would be an example of a disease. So we're both trying to prevent the disease from coming into our state, and we are constantly monitoring so that if a disease does break out, we can quickly respond and eradicate before it causes economic damage to our producers. And I think we're all very familiar with mad cow disease, but there are a number of other diseases out there which can be equally devastating. The next page, page 40, this is a new measure for us in the consumer protection area. Basically, our food safety division has adopted the U.S. Food and Drug Administration Food Code effective January of this year. And this is basically a smarter way of doing business. As we continue to look for efficiencies in our operations, instead of going into places where we inspect for food safety and just constantly kind of inspecting the same stuff, we are highlighting those processes and practices which we know are most likely to cause problems and doing really feeding in on those practices. And you can see listed below the top 10 practices that we're looking for. A lot of it deals with temperature, in preparing foods, in storing foods, in reheating foods, protecting foods from contamination and cross-contamination, hand washing, those kinds of things. So it's basically a better, smarter way of doing our food safety inspections. Another area of consumer protection that's housed within our department is the motor fuel sample area, where we measure percent of motor fuel samples found in compliance with posted octane levels. So we are actually, when it says it's whatever it says on the pump, 98 or 99, we take samples and make sure that those are actually accurate. Another consumer protection measure is the percent of commercially used weighing and measuring devices found in compliance with national standards. Our Measurement Standards Division examines more than 54,000 weighing and measuring devices annually to assure that both consumers and businesses receive accurate measurements in goods sold. And I think one of the things that was most interesting for me, I knew when I was at the department before that we are the ones that measure the lottery balls. But we also are involved, for example, working with Intel to make sure their standards for calibration of microchips are accurate. So it's a service we provide for the high-tech industry. We do fuel pumps, livestock scales, weighs or measures, we do it, I think. They're nodding their head back there. Then we get into the natural resources area and our Senate Bill 1010 activities. And you can see over time, as the program has gotten up and running, where we are in the process. We do expect to complete all water quality management plans by the close of 2004. For 2002, you can see that 24 plans and rules have been adopted. 15 plans and rules are under development, but six of those we expect to be adopted in the very near future, and so we will have nine that are left in the development stages. And attached, you can see a map that graphically portrays what's happened. So the dark blue, Tualatin and Yamhill, for example, are now under plans implemented, adopted. They're under the biennial review process. The light blue, we've got rules adopted and implemented. Green are plans, rules, and review, which should be adopted very quickly. And the pink area are the remaining basins that are in progress. Oh, they don't have. I guess you can see it up there. I got the color. Another measure in the natural resources area, the number of the top 10 plant pest, disease, or weed species successfully excluded each year. And again, this does weigh in on the economic side of the farm and ranching community. The 10 that you see listed below on your sheet, if any of these became established in Oregon, it would be disastrous for the agricultural community. For those of you that were around many years ago, we did have a gypsy moth infestation. In the mid-1990s, we tracked more than 19,000 gypsy moths in Lane County, which led to the largest gypsy moth eradication program ever in the West. It required 4 years of treatment on over 226,000 acres. The cost of the treatment alone was $18 million. And we estimated that the economic impact in Oregon was over $1 billion in loss to commercial timber, tourism, and ag industries. So basically, what we want to prevent is another gypsy moth outbreak. And any of those pests, weeds, or diseases, if they were actually to establish foothold here in Oregon, would cause us major, major damage. So page 47, weeds, another big problem for the agricultural community. And we look very aggressively at biological control programs to try to deal with weed infestations. So this measure measures the percentage of Oregon counties with target pests and weeds present where biological control agents are established. The experts can tell you some amazing stories about little bugs that we can release and go out and kill weeds. And obviously where we can use biological control, it's easier and less expensive than using other methods to try to eradicate weed populations. This is an example of a natural resources and consumer protection measure, the percent of pesticide investigations that result in enforcement actions. So as you can see, and I think what's important about this graph is we have a number of pesticide investigations. We take seriously our job of trying to work with the industry to educate them and ultimately use our civil penalty tool only when we have to. And I think this shows that trend that's very important to us. this graph shows number over time period, number of investigations conducted. Then the pink line is complaints that we received. The white would be enforcement responses. Then you get to the next kind of light blue, notice of violation issued, letters of advisement, and finally civil penalties issued.
This is another good place to.
This is another good place to rest and talk about performance measures.
Katie, I'm maybe you can come back to us if you're not prepared now, but I don't see a good breakdown of the number of complaints and how those complaints might be resolved, whether it's pesticides or the different areas that you do regulate. Also related to that is I think it would be valuable for this committee in the permitting areas, whether it's CAFO or a different type of permits that you regulate, if we could see how long it takes for people to get permits and if there's complaints with those different areas, if we could kind of identify. We're very concerned, I think, in this, in all aspects of this session, the public relations and the kind of service that our different departments are offering to the public, and is there room for improvement? And that's one of the outcomes that we're looking for.
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe we have performance measures that actually track complaints, but we have a number of programs where we do track complaints, and I think we're talking about two different things. We have a program, for example, the smoke management program, where we could get complaints from Oregonians about smoke, and so we obviously track complaints in that area. But I think you're maybe trying to get at complaints against department actions, and perhaps it'd be useful maybe to clarify.
Well, I think the smoke management is another one that would, just to understand as we get into DEQ and others, whether we're the problem that we're going to have to address more in the future, or whether we're making progress and doing a reasonable job of managing that.
Yeah,
activity.
Mr. Chair, basically in the smoke management program, it's when we authorize field burning, and we have people who don't like field burning and call to complain. And our goal, of course, is to try to pick days where we have minimal smoke impact. We do a pretty good job of that, but every now and then we misread the weather, and smoke does things that we wish it wouldn't do. But we do keep track of those complaints. We keep track of CAFO complaints, and they're sending notes. Do you guys need clarification on what else the committee would like? Okay. Did you hear that?
Yes.
Okay. So that's listed in your complete list of performance measures.
But all the above. I mean, you've got a very diverse department that has a lot of activities. We need to have some sense of whether we're controlling or managing that area. Any other questions of the committee? Representative Martin?
When I was reading through the benchmarks and the performance measures that you had, the customer service issues jumped out at me too. And I would be interested when we get to the part of this process where we talk about the performance measures, that we look at establishing a couple of them that talk to us about just what you said, how quickly people get their applications processed. Because I think especially as we're going into a place where we're going to be looking at budgets becoming smaller, not having people trapped in processes for extended periods of time because of that is going to be a really important thing for us to watch. And it is, I think, a good overall measure of how you're paying attention to your customer base, that you can move those processes along in a timely way. And I think being able to judge year by year whether those times are getting longer or shorter is a measurement piece that's valuable to us at this level. And then the other one, I think, is the complaint issues. And I don't know that, I think I would be more interested in some kind of a performance measure about people that were complaining about the processes within the department to make sure, again, that their needs were being met, by the services that the department was prioritizing. But, and I had a couple of questions about specific performance measures, but I don't know if you're going to have a piece later on in your presentation that's going to go into more detail.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morgan, I think we were hoping to cover performance measures today.
Would you entertain a couple of more questions then? You've got one here that says percent of motor fuel samples found in compliance with posted octane levels.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, that was the one that we actually displayed.
Oh, I must have missed that one. I was reading through the one you were doing that.
Right. Our department has the responsibility of testing fuel around the state to make sure that if it says it's 99, I don't know what it, the number 99 on it, that it is indeed 99 and not 89.
Representative Morgan,
in commercial gas stations?
Yeah, are you aware they also check the pumps to make sure that they...
if it says it's giving you a gallon, you are actually getting a gallon.
As well as
measurement standards division.
As well as scales mm-hmm. and all different types of grocery stores.
Mm-hmm. Well, the scales, I think, make sense. Another one that I was interested in was there's a measure that says the number of plant species listed as threatened and endangered in Oregon.
Uh-huh.
And I'm wondering, what's the value of tracking that in terms of performance?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morgan, I'm probably going to have Chuck come up, but we have a statutory program where we handle the state listings of threatened and endangered plants. And our job is to deal with that. Chuck.
Again, for the record, Chuck Craig with Department of Ag. Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I think that the rationale for that one is that the larger the list of native plant species that are in trouble is a measure of the health of native plant ecosystems. We also track the number that we delist as a measure of how successful our efforts to conserve them have been. But one of the charges that we have under statute is to investigate the status of native plants and to list those that are in danger of extinction.
So you list them on the State Endangered Species Act?
Yes. I might say that the State Endangered Species Act only applies to state-owned lands. So it does not affect private landowners.
I'm just kind of confused about why this is a performance measure. What performance are we gauging?
Whether they're doing their job, I would assume.
That's right.
We're statutorily required to protect and try to get threatened or endangered species healthy, and so our goal is to list them first of all and then work to try to get them off the list.
The other one I had question is a new one that you got, which was percent of regional strategies funding spent on agricultural related projects. So you were just going to track a percentage there over time?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, this tries to get out what we feel is a very important relationship between our agency, the Economic and Community Development Department, and their regional and rural investment programs. And those are monies that go to regional boards to promote key industries in those regions. And in the past, we have worked with regional and rural investment boards to work on agricultural marketing, bring in agriculture-related businesses, value-added processing, that kind of thing. So we think it's a good thing if we can get regional and rural investment projects that are related to agriculture.
Is there going to be any aspect to this that tracks the jobs that are created or not created in relation to the money?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morgan, the Regional and Rural Investment Fund programs are actually in Economic and Community Development Department's budget. And those programs are responsible for developing performance measures at the local level. They are then reported back through the Department of Economic and Community Development's budget in that process. We could probably show, if one option would be for us to track, let me back up a minute. We're going to work closely with Economic and Community Development Department to try to expand value-added processing and other ag-related things. And so the question really becomes, they're going to be reporting job creation numbers as part of their regular process, whether we report them as well, knowing that in some cases that would be double counting, or just rely on them to highlight job creation as a result of those efforts. But those regional and rural investment funds flow through Economic and Community Development Department's budget.
And I know that as we talked about the issues surrounding the way that the money spent in economic development, economic and community development, that there is an attempt to try to quantify the job creation that's related to the spending of money, and that it's a lot more complex than it first sounds to be. But it may be interesting to see if there's a possibility of linking that data in here to try to correlate the job creation for these particular dollars. And I don't know if I'm asking for something that is not going to be possible to do, but just to explore that and see. And I have one more question, if I could.
Oh.
There's a number of these that have you've had them for quite some time, and you've got the backup data in here, but is the historical data anywhere in this binder, too?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, apparently not.
Okay.
This is attached to this. So if I may just make sure I understand, you're actually asking for more performance measures.
Well, no, I think that the one that's related to the regional strategies funding the percentage of it that's spent in the agricultural area, that I think that I would like to explore whether it's possible to add another aspect to that one that talks about how many jobs we're creating for the money that we're spending.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I wouldn't want to try to undertake in our department tracking job creation, but I think we could work with Economic and Community Development, and once they count it, just reflect it in here, an asterisk,
the fact that they
will also be included in their measures.
Okay, Morgan, I'm not sure that would give us all the information we need, because as we talked earlier, I'm very concerned about the need for infrastructure. And that's a piece of your economic development that anything that we can bring in would fulfill a tremendous gap that we've got developing. Whether that creates large numbers of jobs or not might be not as important. But so there might be two issues there that we need to...
Well, and those are, I think as we try to grapple with that job creation issue in economic development, the problem is, you really don't create jobs by updating sewer and water systems. But if you don't do it, it's difficult to track, and so I don't know whether this is even possible, but it would be, I think, interesting to explore it.
Mr. Chairman, you're getting into the debate that I've been embroiled in the middle of for, 8 years, just how do you measure economic development? And obviously sales and job creation are some things that jump to mind, but in terms of capacity development, it gets very difficult to really figure out performance measure that captures that.
And what I'm thinking here is if there is a move into trying to facilitate the startup through these monies of some kind of processing capacity, that being able to track whether that successfully is increasing the employment under the agricultural segments that the processor serves would be of value, I think.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, one thing that we might do is have a conversation with Economic and Community Development and just see if they can, I would think in their database, put categories of the jobs and infrastructure, and if it's related to agriculture versus high tech, for example, maybe see if we could do some tracking that way.
Representative Krieger, you're a patient man sometimes.
I've learned to be patient when I'm in a committee with Representative Morgan.
Okay. You better ask your question quick.
she is a personal friend. Katie, somewhere back in your presentation, you had something there that said sudden oak death disease. And we had an outbreak of that in Southern Oregon. Well, a lot of people don't realize it doesn't affect just oak. We don't know where it came from. It's kind of an isolated patch. We didn't track it in. It affects the finding out not even affects redwood. It's in some of the old growth, affecting the older growth redwood, myrtle, rhododendron, huckleberry, other type trees. I kind of think of that as, well, could that move into our nursery stock type businesses, you know? It would seem to monitor that. We don't want to get in a situation we've got to quarantine because then our products can't be sold, so it could have a huge economic impact on the nursery business, which is one of our bigger ones. And where are we getting the money to fund the monitoring of that and to get in and actually do eradication like they did down there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, we have gotten a substantial amount of money from USDA for monitoring and for control efforts, and also we cooperate very closely with Forest Service in terms of the eradication efforts. We also have obtained federal grants under the Homeland Security Program that have enabled us to purchase some new equipment that we can do very rapid PCR testing of both samples from a quarantined area as well as nursery stock, so that we could determine and certify that a particular lot of nursery stock is free from sudden oak death pathogens and then be able to ship it. Because you're absolutely right, if another political jurisdiction, whether it's a state or a foreign country, decides to impose a quarantine on our nursery stock, it can stop us cold economically. And so we've spent a great deal of time and effort getting prepared for that and have the capacity to be able to protect our nursery industry.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Saber, would you like to clarify?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify a little bit on the time to get permits or licenses and also the complaint side. I know the department deals with a number of different issues and a vast number of programs and issues, many, many licenses. So perhaps if they were to present that in some type of form, other than a performance measure, a report on the time to get a license, the time to get permits for their various programs, that they could then report, follow up with this time and for the next session, that might help. I'm just afraid that they would have a laundry list of performance measures if we included every single one, unlike some of the small licensing boards where they just have one license to deal with.
That is a good point.
Katie, my goal is to get you through all of your presentation today. We have almost a half hour left.
Mr. Chair, if you would keep your subcommittee in line, we could complete it.
Well, you're asking an awful lot.
8 days on the job, she figured it out.
But I might remind you, they do vote.
I'm very well aware of that. Now we're going to get into even more nitty-gritty detail, and that's the numbers. Our governor's recommended budget is at 84 plus million. 431 FTE, 712 positions. We have a lot of seasonal positions, and so that's why you see the difference in the number of FTE versus positions. Fund sources, we are funded 62% by other funds, 24% general fund, 8% lottery, and 6% federal fund. You can see now in this graphic actually what percentage of the budget each of the divisions represent. Largest division is the plant division, representing 17% of the budget. Natural resources follows closely with 15%. Commodity inspection, 13%, all down. And again, this reflects the very diverse nature of our agency. I might point out that our smallest division is our Agricultural Development and Marketing Division. We, I believe in the governor's recommended budget, we're right about $2.5 million. It is all general fund. And when you compare that to the amount of money that passes through our agency to fund county fairs receive $3.1 million in lottery dollars compared to the about $2.5 million that we receive for our basically economic development and marketing activities to support the industry. And the county fairs piece is within that special programs pie. Here you see a bar chart and I think Paul had a similar one perhaps in his material. The bottom line is the general fund portion of our budget. In 1999-01, we had 36% general fund. 01-03 ledge approved, which includes all the special session adjustments. 24% general fund. 03-05, our request was at 27% general fund, and the governor's recommended budget is at 25% general fund, and then also reflected the other fund categories. Next chart shows where we've been over the last few years in terms of positions in FTE, and as you can see, we've made reductions in positions and held fairly steady in FTE. The pieces of information that you've specifically requested, the administrative to program ratios, you can see that from 99-01 through 03-05, it's remained fairly steady. Admin costs to program costs running 8.5% to 9%, and then administrative FTE versus program FTE right around the 10% mark of admin to program. Finally, we like this because of the nice pictures and our goal to try to keep you awake. These are, you know, in a picture kind of way, the variety of programs and things that we do within our agency. Staff at work. And finally, we do think there are new opportunities, and we've touched on some of these, some that we haven't. The Federal Farm Bill has a lot of focus on energy, and we think there are opportunities here in Oregon linking agriculture to energy in terms of biofuels, bio-based products, renewable energy. Wind farms would be an example among many opportunities here. We've touched on the product and process verification through our good agricultural practices and good handling practices. A lot of talk about Brand Oregon or some kind of way to market more aggressively for Oregon products. That's something that we're going to be working with the administration and the private sector to see if there are opportunities there. The Federal Farm Bill also helps with resources to help with natural resources issues. We can't do it all by ourselves. Partnerships are critical for us, whether it's within state government, Oregon State University, Economic and Community Development, the Port of Portland. Certainly our close partnerships with private sector, with the farmers and ranchers and food processors that we work with. Always looking for new opportunities with new products or new processing capacity. And then we spoke as well about internal efficiencies. Constantly looking at the way we do business, figure out ways we can do it better, and we realize we're in serious budget difficulties and continually looking for ways to do things more efficiently with less dollars. I'm done.
Very good. Good start. Let me ask a couple of questions first, and then we'll open up the committee. On page 51, you had the graph and natural resources. What all does that include?
Mr. Chair, that is the natural resources division as opposed to the natural resources policy area, and that includes the water quality programs related to the Oregon plan, Senate Bill 1010 and CAFO, the soil and water conservation district programs, field burning program, the commercial shellfish leasing program, the threatened and endangered plant species program, and think I'm leaving one out, but I can't. That's it.
Also, maybe you're going to cover this later on your vacancies.
We have the vacancy list that we'd like to share with you on Monday, if that's okay. Yesterday we were going through it, and I came up with a brilliant idea that it might be useful to break out the positions, those funded with general fund versus other funds. So my fault, I delayed it, but we will have that list for you on Monday.
That will be more valuable to us.
We have, what was the other list that we've got? Management to staff ratios.
We have that.
And then we've got our prioritized list when you're ready for it.
Yeah. Any questions at this point?
Did we get somewhere in here, is the prioritized list you have the mission or the 30% cuts?
Prioritized list is the list we receive instructions to take all of our programs and prioritize.
Okay.
That's that. And do you have the management to staff ratio piece already?
Thank you.
Any other questions? Lori, would you like to give your report?
Somewhere, for the record, I'm Lori Byerly from the Department of Administrative Services Budget Management, the analyst assigned to the Oregon Department of Agriculture. Somewhere in your stack of papers, you should find this handout. And what this will give us is a very brief high-level overview of the governor's budget and a little bit more detail than Katie had previously provided you. It does step through the policy packages and dollar amounts at the agency level. The second page of the handout shows you over time a comparison of the agency's budget from 9901 actuals through the 2003-05 governor's budget. Percentages there on the right-hand side of the chart shows you changes in the budget between the 2001-03 close of session budget, the ledge adopted budget, between that point in time and the governor's budget, as well as between the agency's budget at the end of the fifth special session and the governor's budget.
What page are you on?
Page 2 of the handout. Very much so. This full chart right here. Oh, sorry. Upside down. You'll see that the changes between the close of session and the governor's budget does show an increase in general fund. This is due to general fund reductions taken by the agency throughout the course of the 2001-03 special sessions, and some of those numbers have been rolled forward into 2003-05 to continue those reductions and save it in additional general fund resources. The next page is a pie chart that I think you've seen a couple times already that shows how the department's funding is construed. Shows you the split between federal, general fund, lottery funds, and other funds. You'll see that the majority of the department's budget is other funds expenditures. A portion of that is federal contracts that the agency receives dollars for and expenses other funds, but a large portion of that is for fees and charges for services. The department provides a wide variety of services to different parties, and some of those are fee-for-service types of arrangements. There are also some regulatory fees that come in through those other fund sources as well. Lottery funds in the department is split between Major 66 lottery funds for Oregon Plan, as well as about $3 million for lottery funds for county fairs that the department passes through to those entities. Page 4 gives you a little bit of information about what's in the budget. Kind of the budget is driven by changes that occurred during 2001-03. The governor's budget is a 6.2% increase from the 2001-03 legislatively approved budget through fifth special session. This increase is a total funds increase. The general fund, as you saw a couple slides earlier, has decreased from that point in time. What has happened to drive the overall budget figures up is some of the department's programs have been fund shifted from general fund to other fund and federal fund resources. So part of the dynamic is there's been a shift in the funding sources as the agencies try to maximize its use of other fund resources because of the general fund shortfall. Some of the changes...
The previous piece, though, showed a 15.3% increase in the governor's budget over the fifth special session budget. Will that be reflected in the policy packages later?
Chair Messerly, Senator Dukes, yes. What happened during 2103, there was a pretty good chunk of money, about $1.4 million general fund that was was a one-time cut. The department took a cut in general fund that was backfilled with one-time lottery fund resources that had been backfilled by some federal money. It was kind of this convoluted chain of events, and that was a one-time arrangement, and so that is flipped and restored, which is why you see that percentage increase. But there's a package that does make that reversal. Back on page four, the department overall, over the course of the 2103 biennium, received about $4.2 million in general fund reductions. Part of it was the one-time fund shift that I just mentioned. The department has been able to successfully hold positions vacant and delay expenditures to save general fund. It's reduced some programs, including shellfish program contracts out to counties. It has fund shifted expenditures in food safety, animal health, and Oregon plan. It has decreased services in agricultural marketing, commodity inspections, and predator control. Predator control program is where the department has sent general fund to the federal government to help support that program in the state from the federal level. It also eliminated a $75,000 bear damage control study that the department was going to carry out this biennium, but that was cut as a result of special session actions. Next slide, page five. Some of the things the governor's budget still continues to do in light of general fund cuts is it does maximize those non-general fund resources to support programs. The budget does restore the one-time general fund reduction that we just mentioned. It increases support for food safety, nursery seed, and confined animal feeding operation inspections. Some of these increase in support is supported by fee changes within the department. The budget also adds positions to audit and certify agricultural products for certain production, handling, and genetic identification standards. The department's using the term Oregon Advantage to describe some of these activities that are being requested by producers of the state. The budget also supports sudden note death eradication and fertilizer grants. I believe Chuck gave you information previously on the sudden note death problem in the state. Questions? Page 6 shows that the department's 2305 budget is a total of $85 billion total funds. Shows once again how that is split up between the policy areas. One comment I'd like to make is the department does have a really wide range of programs and divisions. For budget purposes, it is budgeted at this policy area level that you see right here. But just as we talked about with natural resources, within that policy area, there are several divisions of programs. So as we look at the budget numbers and the way it's structured budgetarily, realizing that each of those chunks really do contain a wide variety of programs at a lower level. So sometimes in the middle of discussion, it might be difficult to make a correlation between what piece of the policy area, for example, measurement standards is, versus the entire area. On page 7, you'll see how the governor's budget is split in terms of expenditure categories. The department spends about 63% of its dollars on personal services, 25% on services and supplies, capital outlay 1%, and special payments 11%. The department is heavily driven towards staffing and providing services directly to constituents through people. Page 8. Kind of gives us the process that we use to develop the governor's budget. This isn't a new process. It's what we've been using for the last couple of biennia. Basically, we take the department's 2103 legislatively adopted budget, which was about $75 million total funds, added in some changes that occurred over the course of the 2103 biennium, which included some emergency board actions. September, they received $3.7 million federal funds for specialty crop grant programs. They also received some dollars for the pesticide use reporting system over the course of the biennium, as well as some changes due to special session actions. pulling those numbers all together, we added in some roll-up of 2,103 position actions and compensation plan changes to come up with a starting point for the 2003-05 biennium. Those compensation changes do include the roll-ups of merit increases for 03-05 that will be adjusted for later. So we haven't taken that into account yet in terms of these numbers. Page 9, once this kind of base budget point was achieved, we worked through what we call essential packages to help take into consideration changes we know they're going to occur, such as inflation and phase-in and phase-outs. The numbers presented before you are total fund numbers to kind of give you the impact of the essential package process on the agency's budget. All these essential packages on this page kind of rolled together. The impact was an increase of $2.4 million general fund of the budget, a decrease of $1.9 million lottery fund, a decrease of $730,000 other funds, and a decrease of $3.7 million federal fund. The first package on that list, package 010, are some adjustments for personal services. They include things like mass transit taxes, unemployment insurance, overtime, and shift differentials that are adjusted for. Package 020 are program adjustments. These are things either added in or taken out of the budget related to what had happened to the agency's budget over the last biennium and during the previous legislative session. Pesticide use reporting system had some one-time costs that were removed, as well as some ongoing costs that have remained in the budget. And as Paul mentioned earlier, the pesticide use reporting system is something within the department's budget that needs additional discussion and policy direction in order to determine what course of action the agency should take with that particular program. The 020 package also includes a phase-out of some Measure 66 capital and federal grant expenditures. Package 030 included some inflation and price list adjustments. These are increases for standard inflation on services and supplies, special payments, as well as state government service charges. There will very likely be some adjustments to these numbers as changes are made to the budgets and assessment-based agencies and as we make some adjustments for inflation in 305. Package 050 is a fund shift package. This is what reversed the fund shift between general fund and lottery funds, the one-time fund shift that occurred during 2001-03. The number's not quite a wash because of some of the ways that position costs are adjusted as part of that process. Are there any questions on those essential type adjustments for the agency?
Why don't you go on through and then we'll open the floor for any other questions.
The next page, page 10, what you see here is the beginning of the department's list of policy packages that were incorporated in 2003-05 budget. To note, almost all of these are other funds or federal funds packages. There is one package in here, I believe, that has some general fund in it. So this, as we move along, these are packages that are supported by either fees or some federal funding or perhaps Measure 66 lottery funds that's coming into the agency's budget. The very first package, package 070, is a revenue shortfall package. What this does is it decreases agency expenditures to match up with anticipated fee revenues as well as Measure 66 revenues. We had phased out some capital, Measure 66 lottery expenditures in order to match with revenues, and those are restored later as additional capital revenue comes into the budget. The department also had some fees that were ratified during the 2001-03 biennium. The expenditures associated with those fee increases were taken out in this package and are restored in a later package, which kind of allows that decision point to be made for those fees to be ratified and the new revenue and expenditures to be included in the budget. We're still continuing to work with that Senate Bill 333 process and try to step through the agency's budget as they move through fee increases and the revenues and expenditures associated with those. Package 081 is the rolling up of some actions taken during the 2002 third special session. What we did was we looked at some of the changes that were made during 0103 and saw how those package actions were carried forward. This package eliminated the cost of living increases for agency leadership, which was the director and the deputy director. It also eliminated a laboratory services position that was abolished during 2001-03 but needed to be rolled forward into 03-05 due to budget timing. Package 090 was an additional program reduction. It eliminates one marketing position in the agricultural development marketing area, policy area. This is a position that had been vacant for a long time because the agency had been unable to cover the general fund costs of rent up in the Food Innovation Center. part of a package later does provide the agency some general fund dollars to take care of that rent shortfall. Since those dollars were infused into the budget, we removed the position that they've basically been using to fund that resource. Package 081 and Package 090, these are both packages that reflect general fund reductions when you see those negative numbers. On page 11, continuing with policy packages, Package 091 are actions rolled up that occurred during the 2002 Fifth Special Session, Section 2. $1.6 million in reductions were taken in 03-05 resulting from those previous actions. Positions in water quality, laboratory services, and animal health were eliminated. Fund shifts were made in food safety, threatened endangered plant program, package product inspection, and weed control positions. General fund expenditures were exchanged for expenditures in lottery, other, and federal funds. This package also discontinues participation in the federal predator control program and eliminates support for the Pesticide Analytical Response Center. Package 101 is an information technology package that adds a position to the department's administration section to work on various information technology projects. Department can give you more detail in their presentation about those specific projects, but there is need in the department for the continued work and development of information technology activities that help them carry out their activities, especially when they have fewer staff to help bring those things forward. Package 201 is a livestock brand fee increase. This package would bring in $166,000 in revenue. The livestock brand fee program was ready to use up all of its ending balance. There is a piece of legislation that Paul mentioned previously that does change this fee, which is a statutory fee. Not only increases the fee, but it also restructures the timeline for payment of that fee. I believe it goes to pay the fee once every 4 years as opposed to every other year. Page number 12, Package 202, commercial feed inspection position for $95,000. This would add a position to help support workload in commercial feed inspections. Package 203, food safety inspection positions. There would be two positions added by this package. The department over the last 4 years has seen a huge increase in the volume of food safety inspections that the federal government would like it to perform on contract. This would provide additional support to carry out those inspections and would be supported by federal contract dollars. Package 301, our nursery and seed industry inspection activities at $700,000. There is demand in the nursery industry for a higher level or a number of inspections related to quarantine-related activities and laboratory seed tests. Package 302, Soil Water Conservation District Grants Officer. This package is a net zero package because special payment dollars have been reduced in order to support the additional personal services increase. The department has actually had this function for two biennia, but it's been paying somebody as a limited duration individual. So this provides an actual permanent position to fund something that's really been going on and is a better reflection on the budget of the true work that's being carried out. Page 13, Package 303, Confined Animal Feeding Operation Inspections and Permits. This adds $100,000 in limitation for the agency to support increased workload in numbers of permits being handled within the department, as well as some activities and program education and outreach to assist that program in continuing to ramp up its activities. Package 304, Fertilizer Contamination Research and Development Grants at $400,000. This increases special payments for research and development activities. There is a statutorily dedicated fee that supports this program, and there are adequate revenues in order to ramp up those activities. Package 305, Sudden Oak Death Eradication, $1 million. This adds two positions to survey, monitor, research, and eradicate plants infested with sudden oak death disease. These dollars are coming through via the federal government, specifically for this program. And it's anticipated this will be more than a one biennium issue that the state's going to have to deal with, which is why there's two positions in there. Package 307, Major 66 Capital Limitation, $1.2 million. These are lottery funds dedicated for Oregon plant-type expenditures. In order to kind of reflect how capital expenditures should work, Major 66 has two components. There's an operating expenditure piece and a capital expenditure piece. capital expenditures typically should be one-time, one-biennia type of activities, and so to kind of get a better handle on those and separate them out from the operating requirements. In the budget this time, we phased them out in the O2O package and then restored them in a policy package at a level that matches up with what the revenue forecast is telling us should be appropriate for those capital expenditures across all of the major 66 receiving agencies. We are in a situation where, under statute as well as the Constitution, we have to fund those capital expenditures at 60% of the available major 66 dollars. The operating expenditures are typically personal services type expenditures and have a tendency to inflate more quickly than the capital side. So we are in a situation where we're having to kind of balance those two aspects. And you'll see that in some of the other budgets in the natural resources area. Anyway, this package brings that limitation back in for those capital costs. Page 14, package 3. They only had a couple policy packages. Package 308. Pesticide fee ratification. Previously in package 070, I talked about how we had reduced or backed out of the budget expenditures related to some fees that were increased by administrative rule over the course of the biennium. This is the package that would bring those fee revenues and expenditures back in once the agency's fee bill had been ratified. These are fees that were planned to be increased a couple of biennia ago. In terms of timing, they were increased by administrative rule, and under that process, they are required to be ratified by a fee bill. Package 401, agricultural development rent, $249,000. This is the package I mentioned earlier that does provide general fund, these are general fund dollars, to the department to handle a rent expenditure shortfall at the Food Innovation Center. This was previously supported by a vacant position that was removed in package 090. This brings the agency's budget in line with those true expenditures at the Portland office. Package 402, Oregon Advantage Program Certification, $200,000. This adds two positions to help audit producers, handlers, and crops for certain standards and guidelines. This is a fee-for-service program. The slides that Katie showed you earlier did show that the department has received a pretty large increase for services in this area. The package would help them provide those services. Package 450, Wine Advisory Board Support Staff, $123,000. The Wine Advisory Board is a very small piece of the department's budget. Doesn't have, I think it had two maybe one support staff previously. This adds one permanent position to support Brit activities and is funded by wine board revenues. Page 15, the last policy package 451, county fair distribution, $42,000. Under the statutes, dollars in the county fair account must be distributed back out to counties, I believe starting this next biennium. This is the mechanism and provides the limitation for the department to distribute those dollars back out to the counties. The last section to talk about in the agency's overview are fee or revenue changes. As mentioned earlier, House Bill 2254 increases the livestock brand renewal fee and changes the renewal timeline. Senate Bill 242 provides clear statutory authority for the agency to inspect and certify processes that are used in agricultural or horticultural production. This links directly to that package for the Oregon Advantage Program. And Senate Bill 5502 would ratify various fees the agency adopted through administrative rule over the 2103 biennium. And you'll be looking at those in committee as well. Any questions?
Questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think we'll give it up for the day. We're out of time. I would like to announce that we'll have time for public testimony next Thursday. That's the last day of the Department of Agriculture budget bills and fee bills. And with that, I'll adjourn the public hearing, and no other announcements, I'll adjourn the